Chapter 24. Hope in the Toilet. Students at the School for Good and Evil thought magic meant spells, but Agatha had found something more powerful in a smile. Everywhere she went, she noticed slack-jawed stares and baffled whispers as if she'd conjured sorcery deeper than students or teachers had ever seen. Then one day, on her way to morning classes, Agatha saw she too had been bewitched. Because, for the first time, she found herself looking forward to them. The other changes were just as sly. She noticed she didn't gag at the scent of her uniform anymore. She didn't dread washing her face now or mind taking a minute to brush her hair. She got so caught up in ball dance rehearsals, she jumped when the wolves howled to end class. And where she once mocked her good homework, now she'd read assigned pages and keep reading, entranced by stories of heroines who outwitted lethal witches, avenged their parents' deaths, and sacrificed their bodies, freedoms, even lives, for true love. Closing her textbook, Agatha gazed out at fairies decking the blue forest with starry lanterns for the ball. It was beautiful, really, what good could do. She wouldn't have been able to admit that a few weeks ago, but now, as she lay in bed, aglow in lantern light, she thought of her room in Gavaldon and couldn't remember how it smelled. Suddenly, she couldn't remember the color of Reaper's eyes, the sound of her mother's voice. Then it was 2 days before the ball. The circus of talents would take place the next night, and Pollux came round to classrooms, head ferried on the shell of a gaunt turtle, to announce the rules. "Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. By order of the schoolmaster of the School for Good Enlightenment and Enchantment, and the School for Evil Edifi—" "Just get on with it," Professor Anemone yawped. Pollux glumly explained that the circus was a talent competition between good and evil, where the top 10 evers and nevers would each take the stage to present their talents. At the end of the contest, the winner would receive the circus crown, and the Theatre of Tales would magically move to his school. "Of course, the theatre hasn't moved in ages," Pollux sniffed. "Firmly entrenched by now."
"But who's the judge?" Beatrix said.
"The schoolmaster, though you won't see him, of course," Pollux puffed. "Now, as to attire, I suggest you wear clothes of humble, demure cult—"
Professor Anemone kicked his head out the door. "Enough! Proposal's coming tomorrow, and the only thing you should be thinking about is your prince's face."
As the teacher circled the room, Agatha watched girls accept proposals with eyes closed, noses scrunched in concentration, as Pollux moaned outside. Her stomach plunged. With her ranking, she'd definitely make the circus team. A talent show? She had no talents. Who would propose to her once she humiliated herself in front of the whole school? And if no one proposed to her,
"Then you're a witch, and you fail,"
Millicent reminded her when she still couldn't see a face. Agatha spent all of Uma's class with her eyes closed, but all she could glimpse was a milky silhouette that crumbled every time she reached for it. She slogged back into the castle discouraged, and noticed a few students buzzing in the stair room. She sidled up to Kiko.
"What's going—"
She took a breath. The angel-painted V on the wall was now defaced with violent streaks of red. "Tonight."
"What does it mean?" Agatha said.
"That Sophie is going to attack us again," a voice answered.
Agatha turned to Tedros in a sleeveless blue shirt, sweaty and glowing from swordplay. He suddenly looked self-conscious.
Sorry. Need a bath."
Fidgeting, Agatha glued her eyes to the wall. "I thought the attacks were over."
"I'll catch her this time," Tedros said, glaring at the wall beside her. "She's poison, that girl."
"She's hurt, Tedros. She thinks you made a promise."
"It's not a promise if it's made under false pretenses. She used me to win the trial, and she used you, too."
"You don't know the slightest thing about her,"
Agatha said. She still loves you, and she's still my friend.
Blimey, you must be a better soul than me, because I don't know what you see in her. All I see is a manipulative witch.
Then look closer.
Tedros turned. Or look at someone else.
Agatha felt sick again. I'm late, she said, scrambling for stairs.
History's this way.
Bathroom, she called back.
But that's a boy's tower.
I prefer boys' toilets. She ducked behind a sculpture of a half-naked merman heaving for air. What's happening to me? Why couldn't she breathe around him? Why did she feel nauseous every time he looked at her? And why was he staring at her now, like she was a... girl? Agatha stifled a scream. She had to stop Sophie's attack. If Sophie recanted, if she begged Tedros for forgiveness, there was still hope he'd take her back. That was the happy ending to this fairy tale. Then there'd be no more strange looks, no more sick stomachs, no more fears she'd lost control over her own heart. With students and teachers now swarming the defaced wall, Agatha sprinted up to Merlin's menagerie, where the hedges were finally returning to their old glory after the fire. She raced to the last sculpture of young Arthur, nestled in a pond, muscular arms pulling sword from stone. Only now she wasn't seeing Arthur, but his son, winking at her. Agatha flushed with horror and leapt into ice-cold water. "Let me through," she barked, storming up to her reflection on the bridge. "I have to stop Sophie before she..." Her eyes widened. "Wait. Where's me?" A ravishing princess grinned back at her, with dark, upswept hair, in a magnificent midnight blue gown, with delicate gold leaves, a ruby pendant around her neck, and a tiara of blue orchids. Guilt speared Agatha's stomach. She recognized that grin. "Sophie, good with good, evil with evil. Back to your tower before there's upheaval." "Well, now I'm definitely evil, so let me pass," Agatha ordered. "Why's that?" said the princess. "Because you still insist on that haircut?" "Because I'm having thoughts about your prince." "It's about time."
"Good, so let me What? Agatha scowled. "But that's evil. Sophie, he's your true love."
The princess smiled. "I warned you last time."
"What?
Who warned when?"
Then Agatha remembered the last time she was here.
"He's yours."
Her eyes bulged.
"But that means... that means you're... definitely good. Now, if you'll excuse me, we have a ball to get ready for." And with that, Princess Agatha vanished from her reflection, leaving the barrier intact.
That's your sixth piece,
Kiko said, watching Agatha stab another slice of cherry pie. Agatha ignored her and stuffed it in her mouth, swallowing away guilt. She'd tell Sophie. Yes, she'd tell Sophie everything, and Sophie would laugh hysterically and put her in her place. She, a princess. Tedros, her true love.
"You going to eat that?" Agatha snarfed, mouth full.
"And I thought you were making progress," Kiko sighed, sliding over her piece.
As she devoured it, Agatha refocused on sneaking into the school for evil. During the first attacks, the teachers had besieged the good towers with anti-mogriff enchantments, since they figured Sophie was breaking in as a moth, frog, or lily pad. But Sophie had still found a way into good. "So there has to be another route," Agatha thought. Without thinking, she found herself hustling from the supper hall to the place she always went to when she needed answers. Agatha immediately noticed the new addition to the Gallery of Good. Tedros's bloodied trial tunic had its own case labeled Trial of the Century, alongside a brief account of Tedros and Sophie's ill-fated alliance. She could see dozens of fingerprints on the glass, no doubt the fossils of ogling girls. Nausea rising,
Agatha darted to the school history exhibit, with dozens of maps tracking the additions of new towers over the years. She tried to study them for a hidden passage, but soon her eyes bleared, and she found herself drifting to the familiar corner nook. She moved past all the reader paintings to the one with her and Sophie, haloed by a lake. Her eyes misted at the sight of them together. Once upon a time, the best of friends. High in the schoolmaster's tower, the Storian would soon write their ending. How far would it take them from that sunlit shore? She looked at the painting next to it, the last one in the row, the dark vision of children hurling their storybooks into a bonfire while flames and smoke clouds devoured the woods around them. The reader prophecy, Lady Lesso had said. Was this Gavaldon's future? Her temples throbbed, trying to make sense of it all. Who cared if children burned books? Why was Gavaldon so important to Seder and the schoolmaster? What about all the other villages?
What other villages?
She had long dismissed the schoolmaster's words as an unfinished thought. The world was made of villages like hers, somewhere beyond Gavaldon's woods. But why weren't they in this gallery? Why weren't their children taken? As her neck prickled red, her focus veered back to the smoke clouds closing in on the painted children. Because now she saw they weren't clouds at all. They were shadows, hulking and black, creeping from the burning woods into the village. And they didn't look human. Suddenly, her own shadow on the wall was growing, gnarling. Agatha whirled in horror. "Professor Seder," she exhaled.
"I'm afraid I'm not much of a painter, Agatha," he said, clutching a suitcase that matched his shamrock suit. "Reactions to my new addition have been rather poor."
"But what are those shadows?"
"Thought I'd check up after I found some thorns missing from the exhibition of evil. Sometimes villains act exactly as you'd expect." He sighed and headed to the door.
"Wait, why is that your last painting?" Agatha pressed. "Is that how Sophie and my fairy tale ends?" Professor Seder turned back.
"You see, Agatha, seers simply cannot answer questions. Indeed, if I were to answer your question, I'd age 10 years on the spot as punishment. It is the reason most seers look so terribly old. It takes a few mistakes to learn how not to answer them. Thankfully, I myself have made only one."
He smiled and started to leave again. "But I need to know if Tedros is Sophie's true love," Agatha cried. "Tell me if he kisses her."
"Have you learned anything from my gallery, Agatha?" Seder said, turning.
Agatha eyed taxidermied animals around him. "That you like your students well stuffed?"
He didn't smile. "Not every hero achieves glory, but the ones that do share something in common." Apparently he wanted her to guess what this was.
"They kill villains?" she said.
"No questions."
"They kill villains?"
"Think deeper, Agatha. What links our greatest heroes?"
She followed his glassy gaze to royal blue banners draped from the ceiling, each celebrating an iconic hero. Snow White encased in her coffin, Cinderella slipping into the glass heel, Jack slaying the towering giant, Gretel shoving the witch into the oven.
"They find happiness," she said lamely. "Ah, well, I have stuffing to get back to."
"Wait!" Agatha focused on the banners and steadied her mind.
Deeper. Beneath the surface, what did these heroes have in common? True, they all shared beauty, kindness, triumph. But where had they started?
Snow White lived in the shadow of her stepmother. Cinderella was a maid to two stepsisters. Jack's mother told him he was stupid. Gretel's parents left her in the woods to die. It wasn't their endings they shared in common. It was their beginnings. "They trusted their enemies," Agatha said to her professor. Yes, their fairy tales all started when they never expected it, Seda said, silver swan glinting brighter on suit pocket. After graduating from our school, they went into the woods expecting epic battles with monsters and wizards, only to find their fairy tales unfold right in their own houses. They didn't realize that villains are the ones closest to us. They didn't realize that to find a happy ending, a hero must first look right under his nose.
So Sophie has to look under her nose, Agatha snapped as he walked away. That's your advice.
I wasn't talking about Sophie. Agatha stared at him, speechless. Tell them there's no need to worry, he said from the door. I've already found a replacement.
It closed behind him. Wait! Agatha ran, throwing it open. Are you going somewhere?
But Professor Seda wasn't in the corridor. She sprinted into the stair room, but he wasn't there either. Her teacher had, quite simply, disappeared. Agatha stood between the four staircases, stomach sinking. There was something here she was missing, something that told her she had this whole story wrong. But then she heard words drumming in her head, demanding her attention. Under your nose. That's when she saw it. The trail of chocolate crumbs up the honor stairs.
The specks of chocolate snaked up three flights of blue glass, through the seashell mosaic of the dormitory floor, and abruptly stopped in front of the boys' lavatory. Agatha put her ear to the pearl-encrusted door and lurched back as two Everboys came out from their room across from her. Sorry, she stammered. I'm just...
That's the one that likes boys' toilets, she heard as they shuffled past.
With a sigh, Agatha pushed through the door. The honor toilets looked less like a bathroom and more like a mausoleum, with marble floors, friezes of mermen battling sea serpents, urinals flushing royal blue water, and massive ivory stalls, each with a sapphire toilet and tub. Where the Evergirl's toilets reeked of perfume, here she inhaled the smell of clean skin with a hint of sweat. Following the chocolate trail along the stalls and wet blue tubs, she found herself wondering which one Tedros had just used. She burned beet red.
Since when do you think about boys? Since when do you think about bathtubs? You've completely lost your...
A sniffle from the last stall. Hello? She called. No response. She knocked on its door.
Excuse me,
a deep voice returned, obviously fake. Dot, open the door. After a long silence, the door unlatched. Dot's clothes, hair, stall were peppered with chocolate shreds, as if she had attempted to turn toilet paper into a sustainable diet and succeeded only in making a mess.
I thought Sophie was my friend, she blubbered. But then she took my room and my friends, and now I have nowhere to go.
So you're living in a boy's toilet?
I can't tell Nevers they kicked me out,
Dot wailed, blowing snot in her sleeve.
They'd torment me more than they already do.
But there has to be somewhere else.
I tried to sneak into your supper hall, but a fairy bit me before I escaped.
Agatha grimaced, knowing exactly which fairy it was. Dot, if anyone finds you here, they'll fail you.
Better failed than a homeless, friendless villain,
Dot sobbed into her hands.
How would Sophie like it if someone did it to her? How would she like it if you took her prince? No one could ever be that evil.
Agatha swallowed. I just need to talk to her, she said anxiously. I'll help her get Tedros back, okay? I'll fix everything, Dot. I promise. Dot's sobs softened to sniffles. True friends can make things right, no matter how bad they seem, Agatha insisted.
Even witches like Hester and Anadil,
Dot whimpered. Agatha touched her shoulder. Even witches. Slowly, Dot peeked up from her hands.
I know Sophie says you're a witch, but you wouldn't fit in our school at all.
Agatha felt ill again. I mean, how did you even get here? She frowned, picking chocolate crumbs out of Dot's hair. There's no way to cross between the two schools anymore.
Course there is. How do you think Sophie attacked all those knights?
Agatha yanked Dot's hair in surprise. Chapter 25 Symptoms. The roaring sewer river stretched through the long tunnel from good to evil, interrupted only by the doom room at the halfway point between the two schools. The beast had long guarded the halfway point, where clear water from the lake turned to roiling sludge from the moat. But for the last 2 weeks, Sophie had trespassed unchecked and would no doubt return tonight as promised. Agatha's only hope was to stop her before she crossed back into good. As Agatha hugged the tunnel walls, approaching the doom room, her chest tightened. Sophie had never spoken of her punishment there. Had the beast left invisible scars? Had he hurt her in ways no one could know?
Wait until they're about to kill him.
Agatha's head whipped down the tunnel.
Tedros has to think you saved him from death,
echoed Anadil's voice. Sweating through her dress, Agatha nudged along the sewer wall until she saw three shadows crouched in front of the dungeon's rusted grating.
All the Evers will think it's Anadil's attack, not yours, Hester said, voice resounding above the river's roar. Tedros will think you saved him. He'll think you risked your life.
And then he'll love me?
Asked the third shadow. Agatha stumbled back in surprise. Hester spun.
Who's there?
Agatha inched out from the shadows. Hester and Anadil jumped to their feet. Slowly, the third shadow turned. In the dim light, Sophie looked bloodless, sunken, and a good deal thinner.
My dear, dear Agatha.
Agatha's mouth went dry. What's happening? She rasped.
We're helping a prince keep his promise.
By staging an attack.
By showing him how much I love him, Sophie answered.
From the doom room came a clamor of loud grunts and squeals. Agatha reeled back. What was that? Sophie smiled.
Anadil's been working on her circus talent.
Agatha sprang forward to see what was in the cell, but Hester held her back. Over her shoulder, Agatha glimpsed three giant black snouts jutting from the grates, bearing razor-sharp teeth. They were sniffing something just out of reach. An Everboy's necktie. With an embroidered T.
Can't see very well. Poor things, Sophie sighed. Target by scent.
Agatha bleached white.
But that's Tedros's. I'll stop them before they do any harm, of course. Just give him a good scare.
But, suppose they attack other people.
Isn't that what you said you wanted? For me to find love?
Sophie said, unblinking.
Unfortunately, this really is the safest way after all that's happened.
Agatha couldn't speak.
I've missed you, Aggie, Sophie said softly.
I really have. Her head cocked.
Still, it's strange. The Agatha I know would love a hall of dead princes.
Another violent grunt from the dungeon. Agatha ran for a door, but Anadil caught her and shoved her to the wall. Sophie, you can't do this, Agatha pleaded, fighting her grip.
You'll have to ask him to forgive you. It's the only way to make everything right again.
Sophie's eyes widened in surprise. They slowly narrowed.
Come closer, Agatha.
Agatha wrenched free from Anadil and stepped into torchlight leaking from the doom room. Sophie, please listen to me.
You look different.
Ever supper is almost over, Sophie,
Anadil pressed, prompting impatient grunts in the cell. Sophie, you can apologize to Tedros at the circus.
Agatha said, raising her voice over them. When it's your turn on stage, then everyone will see you're good.
I think I prefer the old Agatha, Sophie said, searching her face.
Sophie, I won't let you attack my school.
Your school?
Sophie shrieked so loudly, Agatha cringed.
So, now it's your school, is it?
She pointed to Sludge past the halfway point.
Are you saying that school is mine?
No, of course not, Agatha stuttered. Tedros will see through this, Sophie. He wants someone he can trust.
And now you know what my prince wants.
I want you to get him back.
You know, I don't think this look suits you, Agatha,
Sophie said, stepping towards her. Agatha retreated. Sophie, I'm on your side.
No, I'm afraid it doesn't suit you at all.
Agatha slipped and fell, landing an inch from the roaring river. She crawled forward and froze with horror. So did Anadil and Hester. The beast stared back at them, hulking black body snared in muck against the river wall, dead eyes flecked with blood. Agatha slowly raised her head to see Sophie gazing at him.
Good never wants to hurt, Agatha. But sometimes love means punishing villains that stand in our way.
Howls echoed from above.
Supper's over,
Anadil gasped. Hester tore her eyes from the beast.
Now, Annie, free them now.
Panicked, Anadil thrust out a glowing finger to blast open the cell door.
I have to warn him, Agatha spluttered, scrambling to her feet, but a force tackled her down.
She looked up, dazed. Hester pinned her chest over the river's halfway point.
Don't you get it, she hissed in her ear. Tedros is her nemesis. If Sophie's symptoms start, she'll stop at nothing to kill him. We're saving his life.
No, it's evil, Agatha wheezed. This is evil.
Sophie approached and peered down at her, hanging over the edge between Sludge and Lake.
Be gentle, Hester. Just help her get back to her real school.
Agatha heard the lock catch, saw the shadows of mammoth creatures squealing at the grates.
Please, Sophie, don't do it.
Sophie met her eyes, softening.
Don't worry, Agatha. This time I'll have my happy ending.
Her face went ice cold.
Because you won't be there to ruin it.
Hester pushed Agatha into spewing slime. Dragged towards evil, she gurgled and spat, tried in vain to open her stinging eyes. But just as the moat grabbed her in its rip current, she lunged her hands out blindly, found cold skin, and pulled Sophie in. The two girls sank deep into churning darkness. Terrified, Agatha shoved Sophie away and kicked towards the halfway point and clear water ahead. She glanced back to see a distant silhouette thrashing and sinking in sludge. Sophie couldn't swim. Losing air, Agatha swiveled between clear water and Sophie towing under. With her last ounce of breath, she dove, seized Sophie's waist and lugged her to the surface. Their heads bobbed above slime far down the evil sewer.
Help!
Sophie burbled. Hold on to me! Agatha shouted, pulling her against the gushing muck. Choking, heaving, she flailed for the wall, but with Sophie's weight she couldn't reach it. Either she let go of her or took a chance against the current.
Don't let me die!
Sophie begged. Agatha clasped her tighter and lunged for the wall. Her fingers missed, and slime crashed into them, ripping their bodies apart. Submerged, she grasped for Sophie, but caught only her glass heel. And she watched her friend pulled, drowning into darkness. In a flash, silvery hooks snared them both. Stunned, the two girls looked back to see the shimmering wave propel them out of sludge into clear blue water. In the wave's swell, they realized they could breathe and surrendered the last gasps in their puffed cheeks.
As their pupils locked, Agatha saw Sophie's face grow sad, scared, as if woken from a terrible dream. But just as the enchanted wave pulled them to separate crests, about to hurl them back to their schools, Agatha's eyes flared open. A familiar shadow was tearing towards them, black and crooked. Before Agatha could scream, it bashed into the wave, dislodging the girls from its grasp. The shadow seized them in its spindly fingers and dragged them away from the castles towards the lake's outer banks. Agatha saw Sophie writhing against the shadow and joined her in the fight. Beaten back, the shadow lost its grip, but just as Sophie lurched for Agatha, it grabbed Sophie by the hips and threw her out of the water with shocking strength. Choking in horror, Agatha tried to swim away, but the shadow pounced and pulled her ahead, smashing underwater towards a reef of sharp rock. She closed her eyes, prayed for instant death, just in time to feel the schoolmaster dig his grip into her flesh and fling her from the lake into cold night air. Agatha hit the ground so hard she was sure she'd black out. Somehow she held on, long enough to open her eyes and see massive trees ringed with violet thorns. She must be somewhere on the good grounds. Agatha tried to sit up, but her body exploded with pain and collapsed back to soggy dirt. Why had the schoolmaster attacked the wave? How could he hurl her here with no explanation? Her head throbbed with anger and confusion. She'd tell Professor Dovey what happened. She'd demand answers. But first she had to get back to school. Agatha craned her head up. All she could see were the same enormous trees garlanded with purple briars. She must be near that flower field where she and the Evergirls arrived that first day. But where was the lake? She glanced behind her and caught a reflective gleam through branches. Flooding with relief, she crawled forward, wincing every inch until it was close enough to see. Her mouth fell open. It wasn't the lake. It was spiked golden gates with a sign, "Trespassers will be killed." The school for good glowed high behind them, spires lit up, blue and pink. Agatha wasn't on school grounds. She was in the woods.
"Agatha!"
Sophie cried nearby. Agatha paled. The schoolmaster had set them free. She felt a crush of relief, then stabs of fear. All she had ever wanted was to go home with Sophie, but what had happened in the sewers left her terrified.
"Agatha, where are you?"
Agatha didn't make a sound. Should she find her, or should she escape home alone? Her heart beat faster. But how could she leave now, when she finally felt she belonged?
"Agatha, it's me!"
The pain in Sophie's voice snapped her out of her trance. What's happened to me? Sophie was right. She had started to believe this was her school, her fairy tale. She had even started to hope that the face she kept seeing might belong to... "No one could ever be that evil," Dot said. Agatha flushed with guilt.
"Sophie, I'm coming," she yelled.
Sophie didn't answer. Suddenly anxious, Agatha scraped forward in the direction of her last call, Swancrest twinkling in the dark. Something tickled her leg. She glanced down to see a vine of violet thorns creep towards her hip. She kicked it away, only to see it snag her other leg. She lunged back. But two cuffed her arms, two took her feet, briars multiplying until they snared every inch of her flesh. Agatha jerked to escape, but the thorns pinned her to the ground like a lamb to slaughter. Then a thick one came, dark and engorged, snaking maleficently up her chest. It stopped an inch from her face and eyed her with its purple lance. With calm ease, it coiled back and stabbed for her swan. Steel slashed the thorn open. Warm, bronzed arms pulled Agatha up.
"Hold on to me," Tedros yelled, hacking briars with his training sword.
Dazed, Agatha clung to his chest as he withstood thorn lashes with moans of pain.
Soon he had the upper hand and pulled Agatha from the woods towards the spiked gates, which glowed in recognition and pulled apart, cleaving a narrow path for the two Evers. As the gates speared shut behind them, Agatha looked up at limping Tedros, crisscrossed with bloody scratches, blue shirt shredded away.
"Had a feeling Sophie was getting in through the woods," he panted, hauling her up into slashed arms before she could protest. "So Professor Dovey gave me permission to take some fairies and stake out the outer gates. Should have known you'd be here trying to catch her yourself."
Agatha gaped at him dumbly.
"Stupid idea for a princess to take on witches alone," Tedros said, dripping sweat on her pink dress.
"Where is she?" Agatha croaked. "Is she safe?"
"Not a good idea for princesses to worry about witches either," Tedros said, hands gripping her waist. Her stomach exploded with butterflies.
"Put me down," she sputtered.
"More bad ideas from the princess."
"Put me down."
Tedros obeyed, and Agatha pulled away.
"I'm not a princess," she snapped, fixing her collar.
"If you say so," the prince said, eyes drifting downward.
Agatha followed them to her gashed legs, waterfalls of brilliant blood. She saw blood blurring. Tedros smiled.
"One, two, three."
She fainted in his arms.
"Definitely a princess," he said.
Tedros carried her towards six distant fairies playing in the lake and stopped cold. In dead grass, Sophie looked up from her knees, black robes bloodied.
"Agatha?"
"You,"
Tedros hissed. Sophie blocked his path, holding out her arms.
"Give her to me. I'll take her."
"This is your fault,"
Tedros lashed, clasping Agatha tighter.
"She saved my life," Sophie breathed. "She's my friend."
"A princess can't be friends with a witch."
Sophie flared and her finger glowed pink. Tedros saw it and his finger instantly glowed gold, raised to defend. Slowly, Sophie's face weakened. Her finger dimmed.
"I don't know what's happened to me," she whispered, tears welling.
"Don't even try it,"
Tedros snarled.
"It's that school," she sobbed. "It's changed me."
"Move out of my way."
"Please, give me a chance."
"Move."
"Let me show you I'm good."
"I warned you," he said, storming for her.
"Tedros, I'm sorry,"
Sophie cried. But he just shoved her aside and forged ahead.
"The good forgive," a voice whispered.
Tedros stopped. He looked down at Agatha, weak against his chest.
"You promised her, Tedros," Agatha said quietly.
He stared at her, stunned.
"What?
What are you sa-"
"Take her back to the castle," said Agatha. "Show everyone she's your princess for the ball."
"But she's... she's..."
"My friend," said Agatha, meeting Sophie's shocked eyes.
Tedros's head whipped between them.
"No.
Agatha, listen to me." "Keep your word, Tedros," Agatha said. "You have to."
"I can't," he pleaded.
"Forgive her," Agatha looked deep into his eyes. "For me."
Tedros's voice caught, and he lost his fire.
"Go," said Agatha, resting from his grip. "I'll come back with the fairies."
Miserable, Tedros stripped off the remains of his blue shirt and draped them around her shivering pink shoulders. He opened his mouth to fight.
"Go,"
she said. Tedros couldn't look at her and angrily turned away. His gashed leg buckled. Sophie lunged and thrust her shoulder beneath his arm, gripping him by the chest. The prince recoiled at her touch.
"Please, Teddy," Sophie whispered through shamed tears. "I promise I'll change."
Tedros pushed her away, struggling to stand. But then he saw Agatha behind Sophie, her gaze reminding him of his own promise.
Tedros tried to fight himself, tried to tell himself promises could be broken, but he knew the truth. He went limp against Sophie's chest. Surprised, Sophie helped him forward, afraid to say a word. Tedros looked back at Agatha, who slackened with relief and shambled behind them on her own. Resigned, the prince exhaled and hobbled ahead under Sophie's arm. Sophie pulled him towards the lake with all of her strength, panting, sniffling. Little by little, she felt Tedros surrender to her grip. With a shy glance at him, she smiled through tears, her delicate face repentant. Finally, the prince managed a grudging smile in return. The half-moon glided from behind clouds, showering them with cleansing light. As he and Sophie reached the lake, bodies intertwined, Tedros looked down at their two shadows in perfect step, at his boots beside her glass slippers, at his bloody reflection in glimmering waters, glowing next to an ugly old hag's. Tedros spun in horror, but there was only beautiful Sophie, shepherding him gently to good. He glanced back at the lake, but the water had clouded. His skin burst into chills.
"I can't," he choked, wrenching free.
"Teddy?"
Sophie gasped. He staggered back and hoisted Agatha, who hacked with surprise. Sophie blanched.
"Teddy, what did I d—"
"Stay away from us," he said, clutching Agatha to his chest. "Stay away from us both."
"Us?"
Sophie shrieked.
"Tedros, wait," Agatha begged. "What about—" "Let her find her way to evil," the prince spat, and raised his glowing finger to call the fairies.
Sophie shrank in shock. Agatha looked back at her from Tedros's arms, flushed with apology. But her friend's face had no forgiveness. Instead, it swelled red with feral fury and hate.
"Look at her!"
the echo blasted across the lake. Agatha went white.
"She's a witch!"
Sophie screamed. Slowly, Tedros turned, his eyes cutting through her. "Look closer." Sophie watched in horror as fairies swirled around the two Evers. In Tedros's arms, Agatha had the same expression. For now she saw they were in the right schools all along. As Sophie watched the fairies fly Agatha and her prince away, she stood frozen on the lakeshore, panting warm breath, alone in the darkness. Her muscles knotted with tension, then her fingers curled to crackling fists. Her blood boiled hotter, hotter, her body blazing with fire. And just as she thought she'd explode into flames, a sharp pain stabbed her chin. Sophie put her hand to it. Something there. Her fingers crawled over it, trying to understand, until she felt wet drops splash onto her arm. She stepped back as the wave rose high, swathing her in shadow. Sophie crashed through the window of room 66 in a heap of sludge. Hester and Anadil leapt off the bed.
"We searched everywhere. Where were you?"
Hand to her face, Sophie crawled past them to the last shard of mirror left on the wall and stopped cold. There was a thick black wart on her chin. Sophie frantically picked at it, pulled at it, then saw her roommates in her reflection, both white as sheets.
"Symptoms," they gasped.
Dripping, shaking, Sophie dashed up the stairs to the top floor study and blasted the lock open with her glowing finger. Lady Lesso exploded from her bedroom in her nightgown, finger thrust out. Sophie instantly levitated off the floor, strangled for breath. Lady Lesso lowered her hand, bringing Sophie gently to the floor. Eyes wide, she slunk towards Sophie and took her trembling face in her sharp red nails.
"Just in time for the circus," she said,
fingers caressing the swollen black wart.
"The Evers are in for a surprise."
Sophie flailed for words.
"Sometimes our henchmen know us better than we do ourselves,"
Lady Lesso marveled. Sophie shook her head, not understanding. Her teacher's lips grazed her ear.
"He's waiting for you."
As the torches in the castles went dark, only a pregnant moon remained, lighting up a shadow slashing through the blue forest. Shrouded in her black snakeskin cape, Sophie smashed through ferns and oaks, shivering uncontrollably. When she arrived at the giant stone well, she slammed her body against the rock blocking its shaft over and over before it budged. Climbing into the bucket, she lowered herself deep into darkness, until a piece of moonlight lit up the bottom. Against a smooth, milky wall, Grim waited, cheeks and wings blackened with grime. The walls around him were covered in thousands of drawings of the same face. A face carved in blood-red lipstick. A face she couldn't make out in her dreams. But here in the dead of night, her nemesis had a name. And it wasn't Tedros. Chapter 26. The Circus of Talents.
To Professor Dovey's office, Tedros ordered the fairies as he and Agatha trailed blood into the sky. To my room, Agatha ordered the fairies flying her. But you're hurt, Tedros said, shivering.
We tell anyone what happened, and things will be worse than they already are, said Agatha.
The fairies pulled them apart. Wait, Tedros yelled.
Tell no one, Agatha called back, receding towards pink spires.
Will you be at the circus? Tedros shouted, dragged towards blue.
But Agatha didn't answer as he and his fairies diminished into twinkles of light. As her own fairies lifted her into dark sky, she looked out at the silver tower shadowed over the bay, heartsick and numb. The schoolmaster had warned them. He had seen who they were. She wrapped Tedros's bloody shirt around her as fairies flew her higher, higher into knifing wind. But as Agatha gazed up at lantern-lit windows, aglow with silhouettes dressing for proposals, guilt and shock burned to anger. Villains are the ones closest to us. Villains in the cloak of best friends. Oh yes, she'd be at that circus. Because Seda was right. This was never Sophie's fairy tale. It was hers.
So there was no attack after all? Professor Anemone asked, sipping steaming cider.
Standing at her study window, Professor Dovey looked out at the schoolmaster's tower, burnished red in sinking sun.
Professor Espada said the boys found nothing. Meanwhile, Tedro spent half the night uselessly scouring the grounds. Perhaps that was Sophie's tactic? Rob our best players of sleep? The girls barely slept either, Professor Anemone said, dabbing cider off the swan on her camel fur nightrobe. Let's hope they look decent for their proposals.
What is he so afraid of us seeing? Professor Dovey said, peering at the tower.
What is the point of us preparing students for these trials if we cannot be there for them? Because we won't be there for them in the woods, Clarissa.
Professor Dovey turned from the window.
It is why he forbids us to interfere, Professor Anemone said. No matter how cruel children are to each other, nothing can prepare them for how cruel their stories can be.
Professor Dovey was quiet for a moment.
You should go, dear, she said finally.
Professor Anemone followed her eyes to the sunset and jumped.
Goodness, you'd be stuck with me all night. Thank you for the cider.
She swept to the door.
Emma?
Professor Anemone looked back.
She scares me, said Professor Dovey. That girl. Your students are ready, Clarissa.
Professor Dovey managed a smile and nodded.
We'll hear their victory cry soon enough, won't we?
Emma blew a kiss and closed the door behind her. Professor Dovey watched the sun smothered by the horizon. As the sky went dark, she heard a lock snap behind her. Quickly, she shuffled to the door and yanked at it, then blasted it with her wand, shot it with her finger,
but it was sealed shut by magic greater than hers. Her face contorted with nerves, then slowly relaxed.
"They'll be safe,"
she sighed, trudging into her bedchamber.
"They always are."
At 8 p.m. on the night before the ball, the students entered the Theatre of Tales to see it had been fully enchanted for the occasion. Above each side floated a chandelier of 10 swan-shaped candles, burning white over good and blue-black over evil. Between them hovered the steel circus crown, brilliant in flamelight, with 7 long, sharp spires, awaiting the night's winner. Evergirls arrived first, primed for their ball proposals in colourful evening gowns and nervous smiles. As they entered the west doors, waving flags with white swans and banners blaring, "Team Good," glass flowers spritzed them with fragrance, and crystal friezes came to life.
"Greetings, fair maiden. Will your talent win us the crown?" puffed a crystal prince as he fought a dragon spewing scalding mist.
"I hear this Sophie child is quite formidable. Can you defeat her?" interjected a crystal princess next to him on a glittering spinning wheel.
"I didn't make the team," Kiko admitted.
"Always one who's left behind," the prince said, stabbing the dragon through.
Through the east doors, roaring nevers shoved in, waving hideous signs scrawled "Team Evil," while Hort flapped a black swan flag so eagerly it broke stalactites off the ceiling, sending nevers stampeding for cover. As he lunged for a seat, Hort took in the scorch marks on walls, contorting to shadows of monsters eating peasants and witches cooking children, while nearby pew friezes had come alive, with woodcut princes shrieking as carved villains stabbed them, spurting black sap everywhere.
"Who did all this?" he goggled, splattered with sap.
"The schoolmaster," Ruven said, plugging his ears from the shrieks. "No wonder he doesn't let teachers in."
Meanwhile, as the last never girls and ever boys arrived, herded by wolves and fairies, they too felt the thrill of a room without adults. Only Tedros looked unimpressed, the last to limp through in creamy white breeches, chest gashed through the undone laces of a royal blue shirt. Face sprinkled with angry scratches, he scanned the Evers' seats for someone, then slumped with disappointment into his own. Watching him, Hester tensed.
"Where's Sophie?"
she hissed to Anadil, ignoring Dot's glares down the pew.
"She never came back from Lesso's,"
Anadil whispered.
"Maybe Lesso cured her?
Or maybe the symptoms got worse. Suppose she attacks Tedros?"
"But he doesn't have any symptoms, Annie,"
Hester said, gazing at the prince.
"When a villain's symptoms start, their nemesis grows stronger."
But slouched in his seat, Tedros just looked ashen and weak. Anadil gaped at him.
"But if he's not Sophie's nemesis, then who is?"
Behind them, the ever doors opened, and into the theatre glided the most beautiful princess they'd ever seen. She wore a midnight blue gown, glittering with delicate gold leaves, long velvet train trailing down the aisle. Her lustrous ebony hair was swept up high with a tiara of blue orchids. Around her neck was a ruby pendant that dripped over fair skin like blood on snow. Her big dark eyes flaunted gold shadow, her lips a dewy rose sheen.
"A bit late in the term for new students," Tedro said, ogling.
"She's not new," said Chadek next to him. Tedros tracked his stare to black clumps peeking beneath the gown, and choked. Smiling slyly, Agatha passed Beatrix, who turned to stone, boys who dribbled into their laps, girls who suddenly feared for their ball dates, and nestled in next to Kiko, whose eyes were wide enough to pop.
"Black magic," Kiko peeped.
"Groom room," Agatha whispered, spotting Sophie's empty seat. She saw Tedros noticing it, too. He looked back and his big blue eyes met hers.
Across the aisle, Hester and Anadil went white with understanding.
Welcome to the Circus of Talents.
Students all looked up to see the white wolf on stage, a fairy hovering beside him.
Tonight will consist of 20 duels, in order of ranks, he boomed. The 10th ranked ever will perform his talent, followed by the 10th ranked never. The schoolmaster will anoint a winner and publicly punish the loser.
Students eagerly scanned the theatre for him. The wolf snorted and continued.
We'll proceed through the 9th pair, then the 8th pair, then all the way down to the 1st ranked pair. At the end of the circus, whoever the schoolmaster deems the most impressive talent will win the circus crown, and his school will win the Theatre of Tales for the next year.
Good chanted, ours, ours, while Nevers added, no more, no more.
Just 'cause there are no teachers here doesn't mean you can act like animals, the wolf growled,
fairy chiming agreement.
I don't care if I have to beat a princess or two to get out of here faster.
Evergirls gasped.
If you have questions, keep them to yourself. If you need the toilet, go in your pants, the wolf boomed, because the doors are locked and the circus begins now.
Agatha and Tedros exhaled relief. Hester and Anadil, too. Because for all the acts they'd see tonight, Sophie's wouldn't be one of them. Evers won the first 4 circus contests, leaving Nevers to suffer the schoolmaster's punishments. Brone started hiccuping butterflies. Arachne blindly chased her bouncing eye all over the theatre. Vex had his pointy ears swollen to the size of an elephant's, all victims of the circus's unseen judge, who seemed to delight in punishing evil. Watching another of evil's swan candles extinguish, Agatha felt ill. Only 3 more duels until her turn.
What's your talent? Kiko nudged.
Does wearing makeup count? Agatha said uncomfortably, noticing Everboy still sneaking awed glances.
Doesn't matter how they look at you, Agatha. No prince will propose to anyone who loatheth to evil.
Agatha stiffened. Her mind was fogged with 1,000 things, but only one mattered. Because if no one proposed to her...
You fail.
Breath shallowing, Agatha turned to the stage. She needed a talent, now.
Presenting Never Ruven, the wolf called,
and the phoenix carved into the stage front glowed green. With his oily black mane and big black pupils, Ruven peered down at yawning Evers, ready for another lame curse or villainous monologue. He nodded down at his bunkmates, who pulled drums from beneath their pews and gave him a beat. Ruven started to hop from one foot to another, then added sharp arm poses, and before the Nevers knew it, one of their best villains was...
Dancing, Hesper said, gaping.
Drumbeats grew faster, Ruven's stomps louder, and his eyes turned malevolent red.
Red eyes for a villain, Tedros muttered. Groundbreaking.
But then came a sharp crack. At first they thought it was Ruven's feet, then they saw it was his head. For there was a second one next to the first. He stomped again, and a third head appeared. Then a fourth, a fifth, until 10 snarling heads balanced on his neck in a sickening row. Drums deafened, stomps climaxed, and Ruven leapt from the stage to a wide-legged squat, stuck out 10 swollen tongues, and burst into screaming flames. Nevers launched to their feet, whooping wildly.
Who can beat that? Ruven spat,
restored to one head as smoke cleared. Agatha noticed the wolf guards of evil didn't look impressed. Instead, it was the fairies who buzzed excitedly. Perhaps they made a bet on the final score, she thought, refocusing on her missing talent. Each Never was getting better, and unlike the Evers who'd won so far, She couldn't twirl ribbons or do sword tricks or charm snakes. How could she prove herself good? Agatha saw Tedros stare at her, and she felt her insides twist, squeezing away her breath. All along, she had thought getting home with Sophie was her happy ending, but it wasn't. Her happy ending was here, in this magical world, with her prince. How far she'd come from her graveyard. Now she had her own story, her own life. Tedros's eyes pinned on her, glowing, hopeful, like there was no one else in the world. "He's yours," her reflection had promised, dressed just as she was now. She had gone to the groom room hoping to feel just like that princess smiling back at her on the bridge. But why wasn't she smiling then? Why was she still thinking of Sophie? Tedros smiled brighter and mouthed through cupped hands, "What's your talent?" Agatha's stomach sank. Her turn was coming.
"Presenting Ever Chadwick," the white wolf announced, the carved phoenix now glowing gold.
Nevers assaulted Chadwick with booze and fistfuls of gruel. The evil decorations got into the act too, with the wall's scorch marks depicting him beaten, burned, beheaded, while villains carved into the pews shot him with splinters and sap. Chadwick, blonde furry arms folded to his barrel chest, drank all this in with a placid smile. Then he drew his bow and fired an arrow into the seats. It ricocheted off pews, grazing Nevers' ears and necks, boomeranged through walls, and bled scorch marks red before it bounced off carvings, impaling each one until they moaned in chorus and went dead quiet. Another candle burned out in evil's chandelier. Ruven's smile vanished. Immediately, he was yanked into the air by an invisible force. A pig nose exploded onto his face, a tail burst from his bottom, and he fell to the aisle with a loud oink.
"Evers win," the wolf grinned.
Strange, Agatha thought. Why does he want his own side to lose?
"Only two more pairs until your turn," Kiko whispered.
Agatha's heart skittered. She couldn't focus with her mind whiplashing between Sophie and Tedros, between excitement and guilt. Talent. Think of a talent. She could neither mogrify, since the teacher's counterspells were still in place, nor could she do any of her favorite spells, since they were all evil. "I'll just call a bird or something," she murmured, trying to remember Uma's lessons.
How will the bird get in?" Kiko asked, nodding at the locked doors.
Agatha broke her freshly polished nail. With her talent still locked in the doom room, Anadil tried to curse open the doors, only to find the magic too strong to break, and suffer a stink bug swarm as punishment. Then Hort took the stage for his face-off with Beatrix. Since the trial, Hort had been rising in the ranks, chasing a circus spot he promised would finally earn him respect. But now he spent most of his 4 minutes on stage grunting and wheezing, trying to pop hairs from his chest.
"I'll respect him if he sits down," Hester grouched as Nevers let out a few boos.
But just as time ran out, Hort spewed a violent grunt and cracked his neck. He moaned and his chest swelled up. He groaned and his cheeks puffed up. He wrenched, he lurched, he jerked, and with a primal scream, he exploded out of his clothes. Everyone slammed against their seats in shock. Hort sneered down, blanketed in dark brown fur over hulking muscles, sharp-toothed snout, wet and long.
"He's a werewolf?"
Anadil gasped.
"Man-wolf," Hester said, squelching thoughts of the beast's corpse. "More control than a werewolf."
"See,"
Hort the wolf snarled at all of them.
"See."
His expression suddenly changed, and with a flatulent poof, he deflated into his scrawny, hairless body and dove behind the stage to cover himself.
"I take back the part about control," Hester said.
Still, Evil thought they had it won, until Beatrix flounced on stage in a peach prairie dress, clutching a familiar white bunny, and sang a song so catchy and sweet that she soon had all the Evers singing along. I can be rude, I can act low, that doesn't mean I can't grow. But who's always been there? Who's always been true? I'm the one who's been good to you. Not a fair-weather friend or a flash in the pan. Tedros, don't I deserve your hand?
They'll be so perfect at the ball, won't they?
Kiko sighed to Agatha. And as she watched Tedros finally join the sing-along, amused by such earnest devotion, Agatha had to smile too. Somewhere in there, Beatrix had a speck of good. All it took was talent to show it. Agatha blinked and saw Tedros grinning right at her, as if confident she'd produce a talent far superior, a talent worthy of Camelot's son. It was the same look he had given Sophie once upon a time, before she failed him.
Never Hester versus ever Agatha, said the White Wolf, after Hort was punished with porcupine needles.
Agatha wilted. Her time had run out.
Without Sophie, Hester's our last hope, Brone hiccuped, spawning a fresh batch of butterflies.
She doesn't seem to think so,
frowned elephant-eared Vex, watching Hester slump to the stage. Soon they saw why, for when Hester unleashed her demon, it only managed a sooty firebolt before fading into her neck. She coughed painfully, clutching her heart, as if the poor effort had drained her. But if Hester went down without a fight, her teammates had no intention of doing the same. Like all villains when defeat loomed, they simply changed the rules. And as Agatha took the stage, frantically trying to think of a talent, she heard whispers.
Do it! Do it!
Then Dot's voice. No! She turned just in time to see boys huddled over a red spells textbook. Vex raised his glowing red finger, shouted an incantation. Agatha went stiff and collapsed unconscious. The only sound in the theater was a stalactite slowly cracking on the ceiling. It fell. Tedros tackled Vex by his flappy ears. Brone snatched Tedros by the collar, threw him into a chandelier, and students dodged falling candles that ignited the aisles. Everboys leapt into the Never pews, while Nevers ignited and launched dead butterflies at them from under Brone's seat. Agatha slowly came to on stage and looked up to see Nevers and Evers throwing shoes at each other across a burning aisle, clumps, boots, and high heels flying through smoke like missiles. Where are the guards? Through the haze, she glimpsed wolves beating up Nevers and fairies dive-bombing Evers, fueling flames with fairy dust. Agatha wiped her eyes and looked again. Wolves and fairies were making this fight worse? Then she saw one fairy in particular biting every pretty girl he could find.
I don't want to die.
I didn't either, the White Wolf answered.
In a flash, Agatha understood. She flicked her glowing finger, and a whip crack of lightning exploded through the aisle, shocking everyone still. Sit down, she commanded. No one disobeyed, including wolves and fairies, who slunk into the aisle, ashamed. Agatha carefully studied these guards of both schools. We think we know what sides we're on, she spoke into the silent theater. We think we know who we are. We tear life apart into good or evil, beautiful or ugly, princess or witch, right or wrong. She gazed at the biting fairy boy. But what if there are things in between? The fairy looked back at her, tears welling. Make a wish, she thought. Terrified, the fairy boy shook his head. All you have to do is make a wish, Agatha pleaded. The fairy boy welled tears, fighting himself. Then, just as with the fish, just as with the gargoyle, Agatha began to hear his thoughts. Show them, came a voice she knew. Show them the truth. Agatha smiled sadly at him. Wish granted. She thrust out her hand, and ghostly blue light burst upward from the fairies' and wolves' bodies, which froze completely still. Shocked students squinted at human spirits, floating in blue light above the frozen bodies. Some of the spirits were their age, most were wizened and old, but all wore their same school uniforms. Only the ones in good's clothes hovered above the wolves' bodies, with the ones in evil's above the fairies. Dumbstruck, students whipped to Agatha for explanation. Agatha looked up at bald, black-robed Bane, floating above the fairy boy's body. The boy who bit pretty girls in Gavaldon, now a few years older, once plump cheeks sunken and stained with tears. If you fail, you become a slave for the opposite side, Agatha said. That's the schoolmaster's punishment. She took in an old white-haired man over the white wolf, soothing a young girl's spirit above a fairy. Eternal punishment for an impure soul, Agatha said, as the young girl wept into the old man's arms. This, he thinks, will fix these bad students. Putting them in the wrong school will teach them a lesson. It's what this world teaches us, that we can only be in one school and not the other. But that leaves the question. She looked across the phantoms, all as frightened and helpless as Bane. Is it true? Her hand lost steadiness. The phantoms flickered and plunged back into their fairy and wolf bodies, which came back to life. I'd set them all free if I could, but his magic is too strong, Agatha said, voice cracking. I just wish my talent had a better ending. As she slumped down the stage steps, she heard sniffles and looked up to see wolves, fairies, children on both sides, dabbing their eyes. Agatha sank next to Kiko, whose makeup was a runny mess of pink and blue.
I used to hate those wolves, she wailed. Now I want to hug them.
Across the aisle, Agatha saw Hester smile through tears.
Makes me wonder whose side I'm on, Hester said softly.
Evil's ninth candle extinguished above her. With a miserable sigh, Hester stood. Instantly a gush of boiling black oil exploded from the ceiling. She closed her eyes just as it smashed into her. It struck fur instead. Hester turned to see three wolves shielding her, bodies seared by steaming oil. Panting with pain, they glowered into the air, informing the schoolmaster they'd seen enough of his punishments. In the silent theater, everyone stared at each other, as if the rules of the game had suddenly changed.
See? He has to be good, Kiko whispered to Agatha. If he was evil, he'd have killed them. Final duel,
the white wolf stammered, sensing his luck.
Never Sophie versus ever Tedros. With Sophie absent, we'll proceed to Tedros.
No. Tedros stood. The circus ends now. We've seen good that cannot be matched. He bowed in defeat to Agatha. There is no doubt of the winner.
Agatha met his clear blue eyes. For the first time, she didn't think of Sophie. Both sides looked up at the gleaming crown, waiting for it to bless the prince's verdict. Instead, there was a very loud knock.